breeze.
Buck Benny, the two-fisted, quick-triggered marksman who shoots from the hip and never misses.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to a special presentation. I decided to bring this out because last week on Wednesday I played you a long-lost episode of Harold Perry in Great Gildersleeve. Well, tonight I thought I would bring out a long-lost episode of The Gene Autry Show with Jack Benny as his guest. Now, I played an excerpt from this a few weeks ago, but I thought since tonight we happen to have Bing Crosby with guest William Boyd, who played Hopalong Cassidy, we might as well have a Western night of it and bring you this full episode of the Gene Autry Show with his guest Jack Benny. That some of you might want to hear the entire show. Jack will come on towards the end of the show, but the beginning is a lot of fun if you're a Western fan. And pretty nice sound quality overall for this episode. So I hope you're going to enjoy it, and I thank you for the listener who donated this to us. It's not been available for public consumption in, 65-ish years, I guess. But here you go. Jack Benny and Gene Autry.
Welcome to Melody Ranch with Gene Autry.
I'm back in the saddle again. Out where a friend is a friend.
Yes, folks, your friendly local merchant who sells and displays healthful, refreshing, delicious double mint chewing gum invites you to meet all the folks here at Melody Ranch. Johnny Bond, Pat Buttram, the Cass County Boys, the Pinafores, Carl Kottner, our special guest Jack Benny, and yours truly, Lou Crosby. Right now, here's the boss man himself, America's favorite cowboy, Gene Autry.
Away down yonder in the Indian Nation, rode my pony on the reservation in the Oklahoma hills where I was born. Way down yonder in the Indian Nation, a cowboy's life is my occupation in the Oklahoma hills where I was born. Many months have come and gone since I wandered from my home in the Oklahoma hills where I was born. Though a page of life has turned, many a lesson I have learned, yet I feel like in those hills I still belong. Way down yonder in the Indian Nation, I rode my pony on the reservation in the Oklahoma hills where I was born. Way down yonder in the Indian Nation, a cowboy's life is my occupation in the Oklahoma hills where I was born.
Gene, speaking for all the Bonds of Oklahoma, allow me to congratulate you on the way you sung that song.
Oh, you liked it, huh?
Man, I never heard prettier music this side of the Red River.
Well, thank you very, very much, my boy. I kind of thought you'd like it.
And I kind of thought Johnny'd beat me to the draw there, too. Gene, you know, if you wrapped a mountain around yourself, laid in a pipeline straight down for 10 miles, and whispered Oklahoma through the bottom of the pipe, old Oklahoma ears bonded, come a-running.
Yeah? And if you was to climb on top of that mountain on a dark night at midnight, Crosby, you could still read the writing on a package of double mint gum.
You aren't a kidding either. And it'd say healthful, refreshing, and delicious. That's a mighty good way to describe double mint chewing gum. Because that swell double mint flavor sure is refreshing and delicious. A real treat for your taste. And that healthful chewing's a grand help for digestion after meals. Besides, chewing smooth double mint helps keep your teeth bright and clean, too.
Yes, indeed, friends. Swell-tasting double mint gum is healthful, refreshing, and delicious, for a fact. And it costs mighty little. So buy a couple of packages at a time and keep it handy for yourself and your family to enjoy often. It's plenty good to taste and plenty good to chew. Healthful, refreshing, double mint gum. Sierra Sue, I'm sad and lonely. The rocks and rills are are lonely too. Sierra Sue, I want you only, no one but you. Sierra Sue, the roses weep, their tears are falling. The gentle doves no longer coo. Oh, can't you hear my sad heart calling, calling for you, Sierra Sue.
The roses weep, their tears are falling, the gentle doves no longer coo.
Oh, can't you hear my sad heart calling, calling for you, Sierra Sue. Well, thank you very, very much, gang. Thanks a lot.
Say, Johnny, who is this a sash laying around a bend on that pinto there?
Appears like a stranger to me, Pat.
Whoa, Agnes, whoa.
Wait just a minute, boys. That's no stranger. That's my old pard, Jack Benny.
Howdy, Gene, and don't call me Jack. When I'm riding, my name is Buck Benny.
Buck Benny? Hey, Gene, why do they call him Buck?
Because nobody can hold on to a buck longer than he can.
Oh, easy there, gal. Easy, Agnes.
Mighty nervous mare you got there, Jack. What's eating her?
Well, she'd been nervous all morning, Gene. When I told her we were coming over here, she just couldn't wait to meet your horse champion. Mm. By the way, I'm a great admirer of your horse. You think I could have a lock of his hair?
I'm afraid not.
Well, Gene's kind of important to me. A lock of his hair would mean a lot to me, really.
I'm sorry, Jack, but I'll never let Champion's tail become a toupee.
Well, that's too bad. The silver streaks both come in the same place, too.
Well, get down off your horse, Buck. Shake hands with two of my boys, Pat Buttram and Johnny Bond.
Howdy, men. I reckon I'm proud to meet up with you.
Well, I reckon I'm glad to meet up with you, too, Buck.
And I reckon it's a real pleasure, sir.
Well, I reckon I'm glad to reckon that you reckon. I reckon we both reckon that we're glad to reckon.
We better get him out of here. He's wrecking the place. Say, tell me, Buck, you still riding for the same outfit?
Yep, the LSMFT Ranch.
I've been seeing a lot of that brand lately.
Yeah, and they all so round, so firm, and so fully packed, too.
Say, Buck, would you like to chaw on a stick of double mint?
Thanks, Gene. I'll have a stick of Wrigley Spearmint, too. That way we can mention both of them, you see. Quiet, Agnes. She's very jealous when I mention other plugs. Oh. You see? Excuse me for making a mistake there in that first word. It's my, you know, I'm kind of nervous over here.
I can understand. Over here
on this ranch.
A new ranch to you.
That's right. But, Gene, I want to ask you something about these cowboy pictures you fellas make. I don't know, they always seem so sad.
Oh, really?
I never seen any kind of pictures quite so sad.
Jack, aren't you forgetting the horn blows at midnight?
No, but I'd like to. While I'm here, I'd like to thank you for giving up your land on the Columbia Broadcasting Range so that me and my gang come over to CBS on Sunday nights and ride at our usual time.
Well, you're welcome, Buck, and I'm mighty glad I was able to do you a favor.
You know, Gene, the other night I was thinking I might make me a Western picture one of these here days.
Oh, yeah? Well, sounds like a pretty good idea, Jack, but who could you get to produce it?
Well, now, I'm mighty proud and plumb powerful glad you asked me that, Gene. I never read stuff like this in my life. Plumb powerful glad.
All them's Western words, though, Benny.
I know. Lived on Western Avenue 6 years. Well, I'm glad you asked me that, Gene, because you know I'm a producer myself. Yes, sir, just made a mighty good picture called The Lucky Stiff.
You're right, Buck. That horse does hate other plugs.
Yeah. Anyway, if I can borrow a couple of your boys, I'd like to give you a sort of a preview of what I mean.
Oh, that's a good idea. Just help yourself. Come on, boys.
Yeah,
give Benny a hand.
Here we are.
Now, Pat, I want you to be the sheriff of Strongheart, Arizona, a little town that's going to the dog. See? Now, Dry Gulch Dan and his gang outlaws are going around rustling and stealing and killing in spite of anything you can do to prevent it. Then one day you're sitting in your office and a man comes rushing in.
Hey, Sheriff! Sheriff! Dry Gulch Dan and his gang just rustled off all my cattle and kidnapped my wife.
Don't worry, neighbor. I've already sent for U.S. Marshal Buck Benny. He ought to be here any minute now. That must be him now. Come in.
Howdy, Sheriff. I'm U.S. Marshal Buck Benny. Could have come sooner, but I was standing outside waiting for my cue. Now, what seems to be the trouble in this here town?
Well, Dry Gulch Dan, the outlaw, and his gang, they've moved in and they're running things their own way, Marshal Benny.
Dry Gulch Dan, eh? I know that varmint. He's wanted for Denver for murder, wanted in Kansas for holding up the Pony Express, and wanted in California for double parking. He's a bad hombre. Well, I once saw him rustle a whole herd of cattle.
A whole herd, huh? How many head?
I don't know. They was facing the other way. Well, let's see where I am here. Well, I can't read this writing anyway.
Well,
hey, what's Dan been up to now, huh?
Rustling and kidnapping, Marshal.
Kidnapping?
That's right, Marshal. My wife was out in the barn, and they rustled her off with the cows.
Couldn't tell the difference, huh? Well, let's map out our plan.
I better make sure the door's shut here.
Yeah, but first let me poke this ice pick through the keyhole in case anybody's peeking. There.
Ever catch anybody that way, Marshal?
Yep, one-eyed Pete. Formerly Pete. Now, let's talk about Dry Gulch, Dan.
He sure is a tricky hombre.
Yeah, where does he hang out?
Wet Gulch.
He's even trickier than I thought he was. Well, let's go to Wet Gulch.
Get up, boy, faster.
Get up, Agnes. Come on.
Are you armed, Marshal?
Yeah, got my fiddle and plenty of extra string.
But that ain't no deadly weapon.
It is the way he plays it.
You said it. I killed him with it in St. Joe. Wait a minute. Whoa, Agnes. What's that shack over there?
That's Dry Gulch Dan's hideaway, Marshal. Careful now. He's a mean killer.
Good. Sheriff, let you and me sneak up there and take him by surprise. Go ahead. I'll be right behind you.
Okay, you go ahead, Marshal. I'll be right behind you.
It's the first time I ever saw two men get behind each other.
All right, Sheriff. I'll take over from here. Ready?
Ready.
Okay, wait till I get my weapons here. That's all I want. I'll be ready to go. We'll get them this time. See that, Sheriff? These varmints all turn yellow when the time comes to face the music. I'll just keep playing.
That's enough, Marshal. They all killed themselves.
Wait a minute, all but one. Dry Gulch Dan is still breathing. I'll fix that. That got him. Well, Sheriff, I guess that winds up this job.
Marshal, I don't know how to thank you for helping me clean up this outlaw gang.
Shucks, it wasn't nothing, Sheriff. But if you ever need help again, just let me know.
Yeah, but where can I find you, Marshal?
On CBS tomorrow night and every Sunday night on my same time. So long, Sheriff. Giddy up, Agnes.
Well, thank you very, very much, Jack Benny. Thank you for being here with us, and we'll be listening to you tomorrow night over CBS for the first time. Mighty nice of you for you to drop around and see us. And our apologies, too, to all the United States Marshals and Sheriffs. Thanks, men, for letting us have a little fun. And now, folks, here's a song that we've gotten a lot of requests for. The title reads, I should say that again. Well, it could be rude or anything after talking to Benny the way I have here. The title reads, I'm a Fool to Care. The words sounds like he does, and the music sounds like this. I'm a fool to care when you treat me this way. I know I love you, but what can I do? I'm a fool to care. I'm a fool to cry when you tell me goodbye. You left me so blue when you were untrue. I'm a fool to care. I know I should laugh and call it a day, but I know I would cry if you went away. I'm a fool to care when you don't care for me. Why should I pretend I lose in the end? I'm a fool to care. I know I should laugh and call it a day, but I know I would cry if you went away. I'm a fool to care when you don't care for me. Why should I pretend I lose in the end? I'm a fool to care. Folks, for today's story of the Old West, let's go back to a ranch near Phoenix, Arizona in the year of 1881. The West at that time was not the settled place it is today. No, sir. Instead, it represented the farthest outpost of American civilization. Ranchers and farmers worked endlessly and fought hard to bring stability and prosperity to this new land. When a man had wrestled with the land for a few years to make just a bare living from it, he was determined to keep it. Such a man was Ralph Bates. His struggle had been long and hard, but now he had several thousand acres of the best grazing ground in the state. Then one morning, that all changed.
Hey, boss, look at this.
What is it, Tim?
This sign. I found it nailed in our front gate this morning.
Sign? What kind of a sign?
Here, read it yourself and see.
Yeah, give me it. Notice, I am the owner of this property. All trespassers will be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. If you wish to discuss the rental or purchase of this land, you can talk with me or my representative in Phoenix. Signed, Baron de Arizonico y Caballero de los Colorados. Well, I'll be doggone.
What do you think it is, Mr. Bates? A joke?
It is. It's a pretty unfunny kind of a joke. Come on, Tim. We're going into Phoenix and find out what this is all about.
Suppose all of you had found signs on your property signed by a person calling himself the Baron of Arizona.
That's right, we have. What about that?
Well, you're not the only ones. Every place in town had them this morning. The Silver King Mine and the Southern Pacific Railroad, too. Now, I don't know what the answer to all this is, but I'm asking to be patient till I find out. May take a few days, but I'll get the answer, so go on back to your homes. You'll know what this is all about as soon as I do.
Well, by the next morning, the number of men who had found the posted notices on property they once thought was theirs had grown by leaps and bounds. And it wasn't long until almost all the territory of Arizona was anxiously awaiting the decision of the federal officers who were carefully examining the claims of the Baron of Arizona. Finally, one morning, almost 2 weeks later, in the courthouse at Phoenix, that decision was handed down.
Gentlemen, we have subjected the claims made by the Baron de Arizonaco, and we find that under the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo and the Gadsden Purchase, the government of the United States is bound to honor such land grants. Quiet, please, gentlemen, please. This man is in possession of such a grant made to one Miguel de Peralta, who, while in financial difficulties, sold the deed to a Mr. Willing Grant, who in turn sold it to the Baron. Gentlemen, the Baron's claim is legitimate. That's all I have to say.
I can't understand that. Judge!
Yes? Yes, just a moment. What is it?
Just how much territory does that grant cover, Judge?
Well, roughly 10,800,000 acres, worth approximately $300 million. The claim includes the city of Phoenix, the Silver King Mine, and the right-of-way of the Southern Pacific Railroad.
If I may, Your Honor.
Yes, Baron, what is it?
First, may I thank Your Honor for this he extended to me today. And may I take this opportunity to advise the farmers, ranchers, merchants, the city of Phoenix, the Silver King Mine, and the Southern Pacific Railroad, that if they want to continue to use the property they now occupy, I shall be happy to discuss, shall we say, remuneration?
And so began one of the most amazing 10 years in the history of the West. Indeed, in the history of the United States. For overnight, the Baron of Arizona became one of the wealthiest and most powerful men in America. Everywhere special groups met to consider the merits of his claim. In each instance, the decision was handed down in his favor. Every effort made to prove his claim false came to nothing. And at last, even the Congress of the United States recognized his claim. Negotiations were started with the government in Washington to settle with the Baron for $25 million. And as his fortune grew, his fame grew with it, until he finally, literally, the fabulous Baron of Arizona.
Hey, Kel, I see in the paper here that the Baron and his wife and kids are in Europe now.
Yeah, they've been received by the King of Spain, and his kids are playing with the King of Spain's kids.
How about that hotel he bought in St. Louis?
Yeah, how about that mansion in New York and that big horse farm in Kentucky?
Oh, brother, you think the government will ever settle with him?
Well, I don't see how they can get out of it, and if you ask me, they're getting off cheap at $25
million. $25 million. In those days, that was a lot of money, even for a whole state. But before the government could pay it, they exhausted every possible channel. Federal workers visited Mexico, Spain, and Portugal, checked and rechecked, always with the same result. But then one day, almost 10 years later, all that changed. On September 10th, 1890, the Baron was addressing a group of businessmen in a Phoenix hotel dining room.
You realize, senores, that it is not a question of my coming to terms with you. You will either meet my demands or you vacate my property. I have been patient, I have been lenient, but I simply can wait no longer. Even as we meet, you are on my premises and I can... Yes, what is it?
You, James Addison Rivas?
That's right. I mean, my good man, I am the Baron de Arizonaca.
Sorry, mister, I heard you the first time. You're under arrest for fraud. Come on, let's go.
And so began the end of the fabulous career of the greatest forger and one of the greatest criminals in the world's history. His story was almost unbelievable. He had started his criminal career when as a soldier in the Confederate Army. forged passes for himself and friends. After the war, while working in the Bureau for Investigating Spanish Land Claims in Santa Fe, he conceived the idea of his great plan. He not only forged his grant, but invented the man to whom the grant was made. He forged not one document, but hundreds of others. Documents which he planted in Mexico, Spain, and Portugal. Documents worth nearly $500 million. Yet his downfall was accomplished by a meek-mannered government employee who received a salary of $15 a week. Here's what he said.
We examined manuscript after manuscript and parchment after parchment without being able to find anything wrong until I made chemical tests on the ink and found that the ink used 150 years ago was an iron ink. There were, however, parts of the Baron's documents which were not written in iron ink, but dogwood ink, the kind we use today. By erasing the present-day ink, we detected the forgeries and found that Mr. Rivas had substituted names and dates and other details for what had originally been written. In short, if Mr. Rivas had stood on his abilities as a forger, we would never have detected him. Unfortunately for him, though, he wasn't a chemist, and I, well, gentlemen, I am.
And so 15 years after it started, the career of James Addison Rivas, alias the Baron of Arizona, came to a close. Thousands of ranchers, farmers, and merchants who had worked so hard for their foothold in Arizona returned to their stores and their acres of fertile fields with a sigh of relief. The greatest, most colorful impostor and forger in American history was safely behind bars. And once more, a colorful chapter was added to the saga of the West. You know, folks, one of the greatest pleasures I get out of life is singing songs like this one. I guess the main reason is because I've actually seen and done what the song's talking about. Not just once, but many a time. But for you folks who haven't, I can't think of a better way to describe what I mean than to take you with us while we musically go
riding down the canyon to watch the sun go down. A picture that no artist e'er could paint. White-faced cattle lowing on the mountainside. I hear a coyote whining for its mate. Cactus plants are blooming, sagebrush everywhere. Granite spires are standing all around. I tell you folks, it's heaven to be riding down the trail when the desert sun goes down.
Cactus plants are blooming, sagebrush everywhere. Granite spires are standing all around.
I tell you folks, it's heaven to be riding down the trail when the desert sun goes down.
Well, folks, That's just about it for this first day in 1949. But before we go, I'd like to thank 1948 for being mighty kind to all of us. Yes, sir, the old man with the sickles made his way for the youngsters in the three-cornered pants. And a new year's already started. I only hope the youngster got a chance to talk to the old man before he took over. Because if he did, he probably found out that there's an awful lot of work to be done in the next 365 days. The little fella can't do it all by himself, you know. But if a few million of us pitch in and help, we can make 1949 A.D. a year to remember. So here's a toast to you, my boy. May you find a better and happier world during your reign. And 12 months hence, may you pass on to a lad as yet unborn a job made easier by the class of 1949. Folks, I guess that's just about it. This is Gene Autry wishing you all a happy new year on behalf of the Wrigley folks and all of us here at Melody Ranch. We'll be seeing you next week at this same time and over these same stations. In the meantime, keep thinking of us until we're back in the saddle again. Now, we're a friend.
To join us again next week at the same time and over these same stations when the Wrigley people will again present Gene Autry, who may now be seen in the Columbia picture Loaded Pistol. Here's a winter warning from the National Safety Council. There are twice as many traffic accidents in the winter months, so be twice as careful when you drive. Reduce speed to fit road and weather conditions. Use tire chains in snow and ice. Keep windshields and windows clear. Check and repair brakes, tires, chains, windshield wipers, heaters, radiator, defrosters, and lights. Your own life may depend upon it. Jack Benny appeared through the courtesy of the American Tobacco Company. Lou Crosby speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.